Who's got it better than us?
Nobody! Your home for the best sports coverage in Utah. You're listening to Jake Scott and Ben Anderson on 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. We want to remind you to make Mother's Day easy and get the best gift ever, a blanket or robe from Miki Couture. Mom will love it. Shop online at MikiCouture.com or at any Miki store. They'll even take care of wrapping. Even better, save 50% using promo code ZONE50. Best gift ever, Miki Couture. We'll talk to David Locke coming up in a few minutes. Of course, the radio voice of the Utah Jazz. But first, let's hear from this Ishbia.
This is a follow-up character on Barkley saying that blaming the coaches, Frank Vogel, Darvin Ham in L.A. and Phoenix, is stupid because it's the people who put these teams together that have failed.
Yeah, the players failed, and then by extension, the team builders failed.
And
right?
Here's Matt Ishbia, I guess, countering Charles Barkley, though it wasn't in response to Barkley, but two different opinions.
Oh, it's extremely fixable. I mean, let's just be real, although this isn't a cool narrative and the national media really won't want to play it out there, but like, ask the other 29 GMs. 26 of them would trade their whole team for our whole team and our draft picks and everything as is. Like, the house is not on fire. We're in great position. It's not hard to fix. It's not like we're like, hey, we don't have enough talent to win a championship. We have enough talent to win a championship, right? Do we have enough continuity? Do we have time together? Like, there's a lot of things we can look at. Do we have, like, the right leadership in place? Do we have to add some little pieces around that? It's not like we don't have people that can score the ball, not that play defense and have one champ. Like, we have all the things. And so how fixable is it? And I mean, if I read the media, I would think we have a lot of problems. But luckily, I get to spend time with, you know, the best players in the world, in my opinion, the best coaches, GMs, see, like, all these people, and I get to spend time with our people and say, we're in really great shape, and I wouldn't trade our team or our situation for anyone else's, except for I'd like to be playing right now. But besides that, for, like, how going into the offseason, I feel great about it. It's not like there's a lot of other teams that have good players that have to re-sign them or they're going to lose them or they're unrestricted free agents. Like, our starting five's coming back. I feel very good about it.
All the media tells me that we're screwed, but you should talk to Isaiah Thomas because he thinks we're in a great spot.
Zeke tells me things are good. First of all, slow down. Slow down a little bit. You're talking really, really fast. So slow down a little bit, and that's coming from somebody and myself who talks very quickly. But that's scary to me. Now, what's he supposed to say? Yeah, the ship is going down. We have no chance of fixing this because, truthfully, that's much closer to where they are than what he is trying to sell. There are not 26 teams that would trade their entire roster for what the Phoenix Suns have right now, which is salary cap hell, all sorts of luxury tax problems that are going to be a major issue going forward. The new rules that kick in with this new CBA that make it basically impossible to trade future first-round picks, impossible to trade multiple players in one trade, are going to really hurt teams like the Phoenix Suns. And we haven't seen exactly what that's going to look like yet. I mean, we know what the rules are. We just haven't seen it in practice, and that will start to happen as soon as this season. But, no, it's a mess. And like he said, I mean, he even said we've got to look at, you know, if the people in charge are the right people. Like, he kind of said our leadership issues. Like, he still left himself a pathway to fire Frank Vogel. Now, I don't know if Frank Vogel's an A-plus coach. I don't know if Darvin Ham's an A-plus coach. But they have nothing to do with how this team got put together. And that is a major problem. I mean, trading for Bradley Beal was moronic. And we knew it the day it happened.
So I have two thoughts for you, Ben. One, that people never want to admit that they're wrong.
Yeah.
And it's not even not wanting to admit that they're wrong as much as it convinced themselves that they're absolutely right still, even when the evidence right in front of their face would be like, no, dude, you're wrong then. You're still wrong. But people are like, no, I'm not wrong. I'm not wrong. I have way too big an ego to be wrong. But you know what I thought of, Ben? I thought of a personal experience in my life when I was listening to him talk. As a 16-year-old, I had to crash a car.
As one does.
As one does. And I got a modest insurance whatever, to go and try and get a new car as a 16-year-old. When I say modest, it means that it cast me into the absolute bottoms of the auto industry.
Yeah.
You know, walking along the little lots that are just selling wrecks, right? So I get to this one lot, and the sales guy comes out. And I remember it specifically, Ben. He used the phrase, runs like a top, like 15 times. And it got to the point where I was like, this guy is so full of it. I mean, like, this car runs like a top. It was old by one old lady who drove it to the store, you know, like perfect condition. And yet I'm looking at the car and I'm like, nah, dude, I don't know what you're talking about. But this guy is spinning it like it's a new Benz. To the point where, and this is 16-year-old me, I point at the biggest heap of garbage on the lot. And I was like, hey, tell me about that one. And it runs like a top.
Yeah, right.
And then everything he would say, I would think in my mind, well, that's wrong. That's not true.
Yeah.
No, that's wrong. When I listen to Ishbia right there, I'm like, well, yeah, that's not right.
Everything you're saying is
like,
wrong.
That's wrong. No, yeah. that's incorrect. And I can't just help thinking, this guy sells mortgages for a living. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Well, let me tell you about this team. There's 26 other general managers that would swap rosters with me in a heartbeat. And it's like, I don't think that's right. I don't think that's correct. Joining us now, the radio voice of the Utah Jazz, the one and only David Locke. What's going on, David?
Not much, Jake and Ben. How are you guys?
We're doing terrific. What are you doing to prepare for the Jazz offseason? Where are you in your offseason prep work, whether it's draft, free agents, trades, whatever?
So I ran the numbers that I have for 5 years, now six, I have a number system that's, you know, pretty amateur, nothing too complicated, in which I look at the draft prospects by numbers. I break it up into numbers I think characterize athleticism, shooting, shot creation, and one other. So just offensive numbers. And I've done the top 35 players on that.
Is the draft as bad as everybody says?
No. But that's my theory, my feeling, is no but. And what I mean by that is that every single player I run on something, then there's like a but statement. So Reed Sheppard has the best numbers shooting and best numbers of probably any player I've ever run. He's in the 90th percentile. He's a decent athletically. He's in the 90th percentile for pick and roll, 100th percentile of all shooters. Like, the amount of players that have been 90% in off the bounce and 90% on cat and, I think it was off the bounce and catch and shoot. It's like Desmond Bane and nobody else. But he's 6'2", right? Like, are you really using the number one pick of an NBA draft on a guy who's 6'2"? Rob Dillingham comes out, another Kentucky kid, comes out great. But his athletic numbers are enough that I could actually make a really strong claim. He might not make it, and he's 6'1". So that's kind of my feeling, like, you know, and let me be perfectly clear. I haven't seen one of these guys play 1 minute of basketball all year. Like, I know nothing. I haven't watched the film yet. If you look at Cody Williams, Colorado, I've never watched him. I'm sure you have, Ben. So I will not change what I'm about to say, but why don't you tell me what you think of him, and then I'll tell you what the numbers say.
He's big. He's athletic. He disappears sometimes. But when he's doing things, they all look right. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So the numbers said he's athletic. He came out as the most athletic of any player. The numbers say that he's a really, really high-level shooter. And they say he can't play off the bounce a lick. Accurate?
Yeah, he didn't show that a lot at Colorado, yeah.
Two other guys that were really looked good. Oh, crap. Now, I know so little about these. McLean out of Duke.
Had a good
tournament. What do you know about McLean out of Duke?
He had a really good
tournament.
I never watched him. Yeah, he had a couple of – he had one really big game in the tournament and put himself back into that borderline lottery spot.
So he came out – he and the kid out of – gosh, you're going to have to help me out. Is it Culver? It's not Culver. Virginia Tech or someone like that, a little older, 21, 22 years old.
Not totally sure.
I did my podcast on this today, but now I can't remember it. It's only been like an hour since I did it.
Javon Porter?
No.
Pepperdine?
Another little guard.
I think that might... No, Porter's bigger.
Around 15, 16 projected. Anyway, my point on this is both those guys look great. Both are 6'3".
Yeah.
Right? So, like, the five guys that came out of my draft that I looked at, the numbers said are really, really good. And that's not any – that's and frankly, Shepard looks better than anyone I've ever seen in a lot of ways. On numbers, you know, hey, Victor's numbers weren't great. So, I mean, like, you can miss on numbers pretty easily. But
Devin Carter at Providence, by the way, is who you're talking about.
You're really, really good. Thank you. Have you seen him play?
I haven't.
Okay. So anyway, my point on all these guys is the draft bad? Well, honestly, like from a number standpoint, like just looking for players, just as many players turned out that they look good on this draft as have in years past. But there's a but statement on every single one of them, right? Like Cody Williams looks really good, but clearly doesn't seem to have an off the bounce game. Shepard looks amazing, but are you really using the number one pick on the draft on a 6'2" and a half guard? In a league where it seems like if you're not 6'4", you can't play. Dillingham looks really, really good, but his athleticism numbers are actually so bad that I can't actually find players with numbers that bad athleticism to survive. You know, and the two kids we just talked about, they look good, but they're both 6'3". So to me, like, I just think there's a but statement, which means there's probably not a star, but there's definitely going to be some players. There were three guys I looked at whose shooting numbers are those three of the worst shooting numbers that I've done in 5 years. Castle out of Connecticut, who a scout called me afterwards and said to me, a guy, a player personnel guy, say, he might be Marcus Smart. I went and looked at Marcus Smart's shooting numbers. They were bad, but I don't think they were that bad. And then the two G League Ignite guys, and you've had a really good point on G League Ignite, that maybe it takes longer for those guys, but the Matthias, if that's his name, and Ron Holland, like I can't find, and I only have 5 years of data, but in 5 years of data, I don't have players that have made that survive with those shooting numbers. And Castle might be the second pick of the draft. So yeah, it's probably not great. I don't know that I think it's as bad as everyone says. I don't know. I've done a bunch of analysis also on what is a good draft and what is a bad draft. And so, you know, I think the real question is, like, where does it just fall off the table? On the bad drafts, what happens is you fall off the table and there's just not any other play. There's no players left, and you go, you know, in retrospect, you go 9, 10, 11, 12 picks where nobody actually made the league.
David, we just played some comments from Matt Ishbia in his press conference yesterday, which I think he might be a tad delusional. But I want to ask you this question. Whose future would you rather have, given their current circumstances, the Lakers or the Suns?
So I'm not sure I do think Matt Ishbia is as delusional as you guys were saying, just a thought. Like, I mean, I think his point is that, like, most teams would like to have Kevin Durant, Bradley Beal, and Devin Booker. I think that's probably true. Like, you know, like, I don't think that's that crazy a comment.
Well, maybe not Bradley Beal.
Well, yeah, I mean, no, I mean, hey, I thought Bradley Beal's last minute and a half was really disturbing.
Oh, 90 seconds?
No, it was awful. Yeah, it was as bad a stretch as I've seen.
No, I mean, he, like, commits two fouls and turns it over and just gets himself out of the game. And it's like, it was seriously, like, every, you know, question on him of whether he's just a losing player, just, like, saw it right there. You're like, oh, that's why there's questions. Like, you can decide that's unfair for a guy who averaged 30 at one point in the league. But that stretch right there is why you're saying that. So I understand what he's – I don't think it's as delusional in the sense of, like, his point is I got three of the best players in the league. Now, hey, he has no draft picks and he has no flexibility. He's over the second apron and there's all sorts of problems in that nature. But we'll see. Do the Lakers or the Suns was the question. I think I'd rather be the Suns. They have Devin Booker, who's 28 years old. I mean, for time future, like next.
Yeah.
I'd probably rather be the Suns next year, and I'd probably rather be the Suns in 5 years. Because if I hold on to Devin Booker, I have one of the top 10 players in the NBA still.
But the Lakers will likely have Bronny James, so does that.
Well, the Lakers do have 3 first-round draft picks and a lot more roster flexibility in the next few years than the Suns do. And that is the
difference. They do, but and I know we have our draft picks and we love our draft picks, but like how far, like I thought this was interesting. I was doing a study recently on where I was giving grades to every pick that's been made and then being able to figure out the expected value of draft position. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So like I graded every position on like, so if you got an MVP candidate, you got a 10. And if you got an all NBA top 20 player, you got a 7 for that pick and a 5 for a top 50 player and a 3 for a starter and a 2 for a rotation player, 1 for borderline and 0. And I did it for every draft back to 2003, I think, and looked at expected pick value. There's, we can talk about that if you want to. What I thought was interesting is the 2020, the Cade Cunningham, Jalen Green, Josh Giddey draft. So that's the 2020 draft or 2021?
2021.
Like, I couldn't grade it. Like, I have no idea. Like, I have no idea what Cade Cunningham is. I have no idea what Jalen Green is. I have no idea what Josh Giddey is. Like, I mean, I see him now. I mean, I know where they are today, but, like, I still don't know. So, like, I love first-round draft picks, and I'm glad we have them, and it's valuable to us, and they're wonderful assets. But in regards to, like, those guys are 3 years in the league. I have no idea. I'm not even sure any of them help you win a game yet. So, like, I kind of wonder if, like, you know, what do we – yeah, they got draft picks, but, like, how far in the future are we talking? Because if you draft those draft picks, I think you're 4 and 5 years out on any draft pick before they really help you win a game still.
That does –
unless they're Victor, right? Like, I mean, okay, but, like
– well, but even Anthony Edwards, who is great and is a superstar, he started this year – really making a difference. I mean, the
and he's year 5, right?
Yeah, this is his 4th year in the league, I think, right?
Yeah.
He was drafted in 2020.
Okay.
So, right, he was that good. There was some real belief that he was going to be that good. He was a one-and-done kid, but it took 4 years before he turned into a guy. You're right.
And he's the number one pick of the draft. Right? Like, yep. He's the number one pick. So, yeah, I get it that, like, the Lakers have future draft picks and the Suns don't, but, like, then you know, some of those picks are 5 years from the day they're drafted before I think they help you win a game. Unless the Lakers are so, in which case, if they're not, okay, to the question, if they're not that, then that means you were drafting 1, 2, or 3 in your draft, and then the Suns definitely have a better future because the Lakers are drafting 1, 2, and 3.
Oh, David,
here's a note for you on this. The average pick value that I came up with after the 11th pick of the draft, okay? So, again, 3 was a starter, 2 was a rotation player, 1 was a borderline player, 0 was they never contribute or they're non-contributor, and 5 was top 50, okay? From the 11th pick on, the average pick value, do you have any guess if I gave you those numbers?
Oh, 1.5?
1.1.
Yeah.
You're getting a rotation player every other pick after 11. Good drafts are like 14. Bad drafts are like 9.
David, looking at some of the teams that have been eliminated or are going to be eliminated, are there cast-off pieces or players you think have value in poaching?
Well, I know Phoenix has one of the greatest situations in the world, but with Devin Booker having 4 years on his deal, and I know he didn't want to come here out of the draft, how much would you give Phoenix?
You'd give him a, I don't want to say untold number of draft picks, but more than 3 firsts in salary matching to get there.
Yeah. I mean, so I make that phone call, certainly.
Yeah.
Top 10 play, you know, that's the best I don't think he's available, but they can't really – Durant doesn't have any value, I don't think, at this point. And they can't trade Beal. He's got trade, no trade clause. So can you – you know, it's an interesting question. If you sent them two good players for salary matching and a cadre of picks, how much worse are they? Like, Beal gets to be Beal, and Durant is your man, and you actually have depth and support players. If you gave them two or three players that could actually play, I might argue they're better. I'm a big believer in, and I thought it wasn't going to matter in the playoffs, but I'm a big believer that you got to have 240 minutes of basketball on your roster. And when you don't have, that's 5 times 48. If you don't have a full roster of NBA players, it's just too hard to get through games and get through the season when guys have injuries. And that's what happened to Phoenix this year. But what also happened is, like, they didn't have 240 minutes. When Grayson Allen went out, they suddenly just didn't have they were nowhere close to 240 minutes. And then they looked terrible in the playoffs too, which was really interesting to me. Because the whole theory this whole time is, well, yeah, you need 240 in the regular season, but you can reduce your rotation down. You know, well, maybe not. You know, Milwaukee doesn't have 240 minutes of NBA players. They got better as the year got on. They added some players, and they're a little closer. But I think that's why they're struggling. New York has 240 minutes of players, man. They've had it all year. Like, there's not a weak spot when they bring somebody in, and then they had enough depth that Miles McBride stepped in for Emmanuel Quickley. He's pretty good. So I do kind of wonder, and I don't want to say names, but you could go piece together three Jazz players and send them to Phoenix. I'm not sure they're not better just because they're getting 80 minutes worth of basketball for a guy who was playing 34. Maybe they're even getting 90.
David, we thank you as always. Appreciate you dropping by, man.
I appreciate it. Thank you, guys. Always a pleasure. And look forward to reading. Ben, when are you starting to publish all your draft stuff so I can get smart?
I think I'm going to start today, actually. So I'm going to turn on some games. In fact, I'm going to watch Kentucky. So I'll watch Rob and read a little more.
All right. I'm telling you, there's not – I do it on my podcast today if you're having a hard time sleeping tonight and you need to listen to something. But, like, in six years, I've never had the numbers that Reed Sheppard has.
Next to Zach Edey, because Zach Edey was a freak, Reed Sheppard was the best college basketball player this year.
And the one thing I think's relevant of how good Reed Sheppard's numbers are is that you have all the COVID guys. So he had the best numbers I've seen in 6 years against the oldest players anyone's ever played against.
Yeah. He's a little old, but still 20.
Well, he's interesting because he's old. Like, it seems like his dad, who, you know, is, you can go read the papers. His dad must have held him back for athletic purposes.
Yeah.
Early in his, and so he's always been a year, you know, he's not Shabazz Muhammad, who was 3 years ahead, but, and turned out to falsify his birth certificate. But it does seem like they held him for athletic purposes, which then makes you wonder, like, is he as good as his numbers are?
Sure.
Like, Dillingham's almost a year younger, I think.
David, thanks.
We
appreciate
David.
It.
See you guys.
The one and only David Locke. He joins us on Thursdays, and we appreciate it. Got nerdy.
Well, here's the thing, going back to Ishbia. And, like, what you're actually fighting for, it's like, Ishbia has the biggest house on the block, and there's no roof on it. So, like, cool, you've got this great foundation, and you have all this space, and there's no roof, so the house doesn't serve any purpose. And maybe we just get lost a little bit too much in rings culture, but if there's no pathway to get to the finish line, which I don't think there is with this Phoenix Suns team, as we learned, they just got swept in the first round with all this talent. They're not close to a title. They've got all the biggest names. They're in the right neighborhood, right? But the house doesn't have a roof on it, so you can't use it. What's the value in that?
I'm going to pick on David a little bit here just for a second because he can take it. But in one answer, he said, well, I don't think Ishbia is entirely wrong. Got these three players. Everybody wants those three players. And then in another answer, he said, well, Devin Booker might be on the move.
Yeah.
What would you offer for Devin Booker? And it's like, well, no, if what Ishbia says is correct or he believes it, he's not moving Devin Booker and he's not going to move his only good player. I mean, I don't agree with David that Bradley Beal, every general manager would want Bradley Beal. I don't think one general manager wants Bradley Beal. And Kevin Durant is older.
You know why
he is not dominant, Kevin Durant.
Here's why I would want those three players. And it's only two of them, because Bradley Beal is not in this conversation. He's not. He's too expensive. He has a no trade clause. You can't use him. He's bad. Bradley Beal's a huge net negative. You have to attach assets to get off of Bradley Beal. I would love to have Devin Booker and Kevin Durant so I could trade at least one of them and recoup whatever draft. But
they're
Matt
not going to do that.
No, Matt Ashby's not going to do it. So it doesn't matter. No. It's what the term white elephant. It's what the white elephant means. It's this gift that's so great that it bankrupts you because you have to feed it and take care of it. Kevin Durant is a white elephant. He seems so great, but if you're unwilling to trade him, he has zero value to you because he will not get you where you need to go. It's a huge problem.
Yeah, I agree. But that doesn't feel like a very Danny Ainge move either to acquire Devin Booker, because in order to do it, you'd have to overspend because the owner's not going to do it. You'd have to make the offer so worth it that they're not going to pass. That's Danny Ainge pounces on Kyrie Irving, who decided he doesn't like LeBron anymore, where they're desperate to get rid of their star, or they're motivated to get rid of their star, not, well, I'm going to pry this star out of Phoenix. That's when you end up making bad moves. That's when you end up doing what the Knicks did for Carmelo Anthony, where you give them everything.
Yeah.
And yeah, you got Carmelo Anthony, but you got nothing left.
No, the move out there right now that kind of screams what you're talking about with Danny Ainge, and I'm not saying this is going to happen at all, and maybe he's also equally Bradley Beal untouchable, though he's a much better player, is, well, the Milwaukee Bucks just spent, and this is, I said this in my podcast,
nowhere.
They spent $100, just for a round number, $100 on Damian Lillard. Well, Damian Lillard's no longer a $100 player. He's an $80 player. And the Jazz this offseason buy him for $60, right? And they get an $80 player for $60, where a year ago they were willing to spend $100, and someone did in Drew Holiday and draft picks. And the Jazz say, okay, he's no longer the $100 player, and people are going to think that's bad. But actually the value is we're getting an $80 player for $60. That's a Danny Ainge type of move, right? Which is, we're going to get the player that actually has a better value than the universal thought, and you're paying less for him, even if he's not what he once was. That kind of screams a Danny Ainge move to me, whereas, you know, they were interested a year ago. I'm not sure Danny Ainge gets swayed so much by one bad season in Milwaukee that he thinks that this guy, Damian Lillard, is no longer playable, when by all reports last year he was interested in him.
All right, stay tuned. We'll have more coming up next. It's Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Whether it's the Jazz, Utes, Cougars, or Aggies, these guys have got you covered.
Trying to eat, fellas.
You're locked on to Jake Scott and Ben Anderson.
1, 2, 3, move it.
On 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Jake and Ben, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. Want to remind you to nominate the youth sports volunteer you know for the Hercules Hero of the Week. Submit your nomination at kslsports.com/contests and listen every afternoon every Thursday afternoon, to JJ and Alex for the winner. Help us celebrate the efforts of those volunteers making an impact with the Hercules Hero of the Week, sponsored by Hercules Credit Union.
The Los Angeles Lakers are expected to part ways with Darvin Ham in the near future, according to Jovan Buha of The Athletic.
Right. Yeah,
Ham was hired by the Lakers in 2022, replaced Frank Vogel. I forgot that that's who he was replacing.
Yeah.
Of course, because now Frank Vogel's on the second hottest seat.
Oh, he's going to lose his job too?
Yeah, probably.
I love it. I love it that, you know, Ishbia thinks he's going to come in and show everybody how it's done, and then he does it the same way everybody does. Well, I can't fire these players. Plus, I kind of hero worship them, so... Well, let's fire the coach.
And look, there are moves. I do believe the idea that if you get those three guys on the floor together more next year, Bradley Beal, Kevin Durant, Devin Booker, they will be better together. The more you play together, the better you are. Our show is better today than it was 6 months ago because we have chemistry. We're better with Sarah now than we were a year ago because she was newer and she's better at her job now. So that's an advantage. That helps. They can go out and make a run at a minimum contract and see if that interests Chris Dunn. If the Jazz don't want to pay Chris Dunn more than that, maybe Chris Dunn says, well, I'd like to go play with those guys. I'll go down to Phoenix. It's warm there. I don't like Salt Lake. It's cold. Never heard Chris Dunn say that in my life, by the way. But, you know, sure, That little things like that will help. That's probably a better option than what they started the season with and some of these other vets that they could retool around. Now, the problem is I don't know if a lot of vets saw enough from Phoenix to say, oh, yeah, I'll go play on a minimum contract there. Remember David West passed up signing with the Pelicans for like – or maybe it was the Spurs even for like $12 million, and he went and signed a minimum deal with Golden State,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he won a title. Well, that's not at all what Phoenix has portrayed that they're close to doing. So I think that's going to be an issue is they probably won't get some of those guys.
No, they won't.
So that's going to be the issue is, yeah, maybe you have your starting five back. It's not a great starting five. He said they have great defensive players. They don't. But, yeah, you can fire Vogel. See if that helps. I don't know.
What do you bet me they hire J.J. Redick, LeBron's buddy?
In L.A.
In L.A.
Certainly has been kind of the rumor. He's been up for the Charlotte job. But, yeah, LeBron started doing a podcast with J.J., and they're talking X's and O's. And they drink wine together on this podcast, and then LeBron says, yeah, hire him. That means LeBron's the head coach.
Yeah.
Very possible.
He's also the general manager. And he's going to make a move for Trae Young or something ridiculous. You, Palinka.
Yeah.
No, it's amazing. Jeannie Buss was supposed to be the sane child that was going to step in and re-guide the Lakers. I'm pretty sure she has no idea what she's doing. Rob Pelinka was Kobe's agent, if you'll remember. Like, do you not have a Rolodex? Do you just hire the people that are in your immediate sphere? Has Rob Pelinka even ever, like, represented anyone else?
Oh, yeah. Dante Exum, right? But it was LeBron's guys or LeBron.
Well, I mean, I just, like, Jeannie hires Linda Rambis. She hires Rob Pelinka. It's like... I don't know. She's not running. She's hiring her friends. She doesn't know what she's doing is my point. I don't think Jim knew what he was doing. I don't think Jeannie knows what she's doing. Right? All right. Good time for the Lakers. Out of the two games tonight, Bucks Pacers, Ben, Indiana leads 3-2, and the Knicks Sixers, New York up 3-2. How many series do we see finished this evening?
I don't think we're going to see Dame... or Giannis tonight. So Indiana should bounce back at home. I mean, Milwaukee played great in their last game. They really were good. And Chris Middleton still has something in the tank. He's not a superstar, but like, am I betting on Malik Beasley to have a huge game again? No. Is Bobby Portis going to keep it together? I don't know. Probably not on the road. He's really up and down. So I would bet Indiana closes it out. They know they have to. I don't think they're going to go back to game seven, potentially with Dame and Giannis maybe available in a game seven because they look at the second round and say, well, maybe we could beat the Knicks or maybe we could beat the 76ers. So let's go out and push it for a game seven. We'll get a couple days off and then we can play there. So I think there's a better chance that closes out. They're going back to New York right now? They're going back to Philly, 3-2. Yeah, more likely Indiana closes it out. But I wouldn't rule out the Knicks.
Yeah, I think probably more likely Indiana. I think Philly gets the W. I think Philly gets the win.
They need Joel to make life easier on Tyrese Maxey. You're still asking a lot of Tyrese to be points in the final 30 seconds.
Yeah, Embiid stunk last
game. And Joel
game.
Should be the best player in that series. Like, right. Of course he's better than Jalen Brunson. I love Jalen Brunson. Joel's the reigning MVP, and before his injury this year was having the greatest statistical season we've ever seen. He's awesome. He still should be awesome. But... You're also betting on the rest of the supporting cast in Philly to not be terrible. And I'm not sure I totally believe, as smart as Nicholas Batum is, as smart as Kyle Lowry is, that they're going to bring it every night. Or that they're going to get this crazy last-minute production to put them in this spot where they have a chance to win, to send that game to overtime. So we could have two closeouts tonight, but I would more bet on Indiana because they're playing at home. I'd love game seven in both, personally.
Stay tuned. We'll wrap things up. Coming up right around the corner, it's the Jacob Ben Show, 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
The sports you love. The teams you can't live without.
Get a sense of urgency!
This is Jake Scott and Ben Anderson on 97.5 The KSL Sports Zone.
Two amigos on the airways talking sports. They got him made jokes and also loves his tie guy. Ben's got style with his scarves. Oh my.
Jake and Ben. 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. You know, this just puts me in a good mood now.
Island living.
This segment brought to you by Peach Doors and Windows, Utah's premier door and window retailer, combining beauty and technology on doors and windows since 1993. Call them today for your free in-home estimate, 801-566-1255. We also want to remind you to join Hans and Scotty coming up on Monday from noon to 3 as they broadcast live from Mickey Couture in Layton. Make Mother's Day easy and get the best gift ever, a blanket from Mickey Couture. Mom will love it. Shop online at MickeyCouture.com or at any Mickey store. Speaking of Hans.
Yeah.
And our great musical creations on this show. You see that our guy Rock got his first offer?
That's got to be one of the best feelings of all time, right? Getting a scholarship offer? Where's he going?
Well, he got an offer from Washington State.
Did he sign his papers?
I don't think so.
Is he locked in?
He said it's his first offer.
Then lock in, buddy.
And
your first love.
He sent out a very, apparently he and Hans surprised Amanda with the news. And there's a very charming
Amanda
video.
Amanda is Hans's wife. And
online of how excited she is for him and all that. Very, very cool.
Is that all the kids got scholarships? Because he's got a bunch of daughters who play volleyball, right?
He does? So, well, yeah, of course. Hans, he knew this going into the relationship. Amanda, a world-class athlete herself,
this
volleyball
was
player.
A little bit of a Yao Ming situation.
Yeah, right, where like... Yeah, he knew what he was doing.
This was Jurassic Park.
He's like, we're not paying for college. We're not. Hey, Hans, have you started a college fund for your kids? This is years ago. No.
Yeah, it's called My Wedding Day.
Yeah. These kids are getting scholarships. Are you kidding?
Yeah. It's called the Singles Ward. I was looking for scholarships. If you catch my drift.
So shout out to Rock.
Yeah, it's incredible.
It is incredible. It's really cool. Happy for him. God, I've known Rock since he was a little kid. He is not small anymore.
Yeah, there was never a little kid. He was always big for his age, and now he's very big for his age. And you will not be the last. In fact, I'm surprised it was a not local school that offered him first.
Well, Rock still has another year to go.
Yeah,
so he does. Another year, 2 years?
Is he not a senior this year?
I think he's going to be a junior this year.
Regardless.
I should know.
Yeah.
Apologies. But no, I think it's pretty early in the process. I would guess that we're going to see some local schools follow suit. But shout out to Rock for getting an offer.
6'6", 275, class of 2025. So he's going into a senior year.
Okay. Got to go out there and wreck some shop.
Got an offer to Washington State.
But happy, certainly happy for the Olsen.
No, it's incredible.
Family.
Yeah.
How weird is it going to be coming up, though, that, like, I thought about this, that Washington State is... in the Pac-2?
That was my thought, too. When I saw it last night, I was like, it's not a Mountain West school. It's a P5 school.
But I was just thinking how hard it is got to be to recruit to that, because they just don't have a determined future in any way, shape, or form. It's not really their fault, because Washington State kind of has to stay in this. The Pac-12 has to be a thing for them, basically, to get their money. So they can't move into the Mountain West or attract other schools. They're in this weird just hold. And, you know, I feel bad for Washington State and Oregon State.
Oh, man. It could have gone better for Utah, but thank goodness it didn't go worse.
Could easily have gone worse.
Like, you could have gone to the Big Ten. I guess that's kind of Utah fans' dream scenario. I actually don't know if that's better. I get that the finance is there. But, like, if they were having you the same way, halving you the same way they are with Oregon and USC and all these teams, they're like, well, okay, little brother, we're not going to give you all the money up front. Like, Utah getting a full share of the Big 12, walking into this conference where they are as a program with the head coach they have, is a pretty great scenario. It's a pretty great situation.
I don't know where this fantasy has come from about Utah going to the Big 10. I don't know what's created that.
Well, down the SEC, that was...
I mean, I don't know where that's come from. I mean, you think if Utah was... Why aren't they in the Big Ten? But the Big 12 could easily have said, well, we've got BYU, so we've got your market.
Yeah, we're good.
We're good.
We're good. Or we're only taking Arizona State. We just don't want to expand that much.
you know, if the Big 12 wasn't truly into putting down the Pac-12 like they were, obviously, your mark, go back to, you know, the lobbing grenades comment at Pac-12 Media Day. I mean, your mark was obviously out to subdue the Pac-12.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was part of the incentive to take Utah. But he could have easily said, no, that's good. We're solid. And I don't know how much Colorado stuck up for Utah, which I would guess would be nice. But, yeah, Utah's in a as best scenario as they could have hoped for.
The only reason Utah's there is because of their own doing, because they won a bunch of games. If Utah was bad, there would have been no reason to have them. You didn't need Utah. But you needed Utah because they were really good. That's why Utah is there. Because Utah has been to two Rose Bowls and has a bunch of Pac-12 titles. That's why. If Utah had been a horrendous program, you already had Utah. Like you said, you already had the area. You already had the valuable TV market in the state because you had BYU. You didn't have to have Utah. You could have gone Vegas. You could have gone San Diego State. Like, you could have gone to a better geographic area. But Utah's a winner. Utah's a team, and they have done that themselves, so credit them for that.
All right. On the way out, Rock, do we want to play Second Chances on the way out?
Absolutely. This is a first chance. Now,
congratulations to Rock Olson.
No throw in anymore.
First D1 offer.
Throwing a rock to Washington State.
Go Cougs. All right. We give you Second Chances.
Thanks, Sarah.
Got a story about a man named Hans. Used to play ball, had big dreams and plans. But he wasn't as good as his Uncle Merlin. Always felt like he was just a throwing in. Now his son Rock, he was just a throwing in. Now his son Rock, he's the real deal. Gonna take the field, show him how it feels. Hans had his time, but now it's Rock's turn. He's gonna make his mark. Let the world love learn. Take it to the highest spot.